The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
West Media, therefore, be it resolved that the Nova Scotia House of Assembly congratulates Annapolis Valley Radio for its achievements in being named the best media for 2013 and acknowledge its exemplary contributions to the Annapolis Valley community. Mr. Speaker, I request waiver of notice and passage without debate.
There has been a request for waiver. Is it agreed? All those in favor say aye. All those against say nay. Motion is carried. Orders of the day. As we begin oral questions put by members to ministers, I remind all honourable members that the use of BlackBerry's laptops and any other electronic devices not permitted during question period, so that they are to remain off during that time period. Oral questions put by members. The time is now 3:26. We will finish at 4:56. I will now recognize the Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In 2009, the Premier went to the doorsteps of families across this province, looked Nova Scotians in the eyes and told them, no tax increases, no program cuts, and we will balance the budget every year of our mandate. What Nova Scotians got were tax hikes. The Premier hiked the HST, increased over 1,400 user fees, and added the NDP energy tax to every power bill in the province, Mr. Speaker. And now we learn that the Premier and his finance minister tabled a misleading budget so that the Premier could say that the NDP was on track. Mr. Speaker, after misleading Nova Scotians time and time again, what broken promises and misinformation will the Premier tell Nova Scotians why they should believe him now?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, this is a government that prides itself on the accomplishments set out in the throne speech. Mr. Speaker, we took one of the most difficult economic recessionary times in our history and managed to not only get through that without massive labour disruptions, without running, including getting us back into balance, Mr. Speaker, having inherited a government that was on the road to a $1.4 billion deficit. And, Mr. Speaker, we are turning the corner of this province to a brighter future for all our citizens.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, that's one long corner, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, it's been fully established by the Auditor General that the Finance Minister stood in his place and delivered a budget that he knew to be false. On March 2012, the Finance Department had the updated revenue estimates and they had run them through their economic models. In an article published in the Chronicle Herald on February 8, 2013, the Auditor General said, and I quote, they had the latter numbers and they ran on them. And that's why we said, well, why wouldn't you use them, Mr. Speaker? You have to use the most current information that you have, Mr. Speaker, end of quote. So, Mr. Speaker, the Premier allowed a budget to be published based on overestimated revenues and did nothing to correct this misleading information. How can he expect Nova Scotians to believe anything in this upcoming budget?
The Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, none of that is true. He knows it's not true. In fact, Mr. Speaker, the preparation of the last budget was done exactly the way that it should have been. was based on the economic data that was in the Department of Finance when the cutoff date arrived, which incidentally, Mr. Speaker, is exactly the way that past governments prepared their budgets.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplement, on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, this is a Premier that said no tax increases, hiked the HST, increased 1,400 user fees, no program cuts, took $65 million out of public education, Mr. Speaker. And now he wants Nova Scotians to believe him over the Auditor General, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, when will the Premier own up to his broken promises and misleading information and start respecting hardworking Nova Scotians?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, what this government did was take one of the worst economic situations in our history and during the years of that recession protect the most vulnerable people in our society, put more money in their pocket through the affordable tax credit, put more money in their pocket by taking the HST off of home electricity, something that the Leader of the Opposition voted to put in place when he was supporting the Conservative government, Mr. Speaker. This is a government that is proud of its accomplishments. It's proud of its budgets, and it's proud of the direction that we are taking this province.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, the Auditor General's report clearly shows that the 2012-13 budget contained a known error of $27 million. It could have been corrected, and it wasn't. They could have told us about it, and they didn't. I asked the Premier, why did he allow a false budget to be presented to the people of Nova Scotia?
Premier.
Mr. Speaker, quite the contrary. The budget that was presented on the basis of the economic information as of the cutoff date, as I've said before, which is exactly the same process that former Conservative governments used in their budgeting process, the exact same process that was used by former Liberal governments. Mr. Speaker, what the Auditor General did do was come forward with recommendations which we have adopted and which will lead to an even cleaner audit of the books of the province.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, when you know it's wrong and you don't fix it, it's false. Only this government has that kind of record. The Premier is the head of the government. It is his responsibility to make sure that the budgets that are given to the people of Nova Scotia are right and not false. So I will ask the Premier, when did he first know that his budget contained a $27 million falsehood?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I can only say again, the Leader of the Opposition actually is the person who is creating misinformation. The budget was done in accordance with the practice that has been done every year, Mr. Speaker. It was done correctly. It was submitted for the House to consider, as it should have been.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, we have had budgets in this House year after year after year, and we've had Auditors General review them year after year after year, and only this year did the Auditor General say that the budget was knowingly wrong. That's what happened under this Premier's time, Mr. Speaker. In fact, today at Public Accounts, the Deputy Minister of Finance said that her department informed, and I quote, their political masters about the error. Clearly, the decision to fudge the budget was a political one. Either the Premier made it or someone else made it in his name. So I will ask the Premier who in his government made the decision to falsify the budget.
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I find the inflammatory language of the Leader of the Conservative Party to be unbecoming, mainly because the people of Nova Scotia have the right to expect that all of the work that is done in this House is done in good faith. Mr. Speaker, the method for determining the estimates of the budget in the previous year was exactly the same way as it has always been done before, Mr. Speaker. Any information that came in after the cutoff date was referred to the first forecast, as it has always been done and was done.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, the budget is only as good as the information used to make the estimates, Mr. Speaker. Last year, the Premier produced a budget that deliberately overstated the estimates by $27 million of revenue. Mr. Speaker, a shortfall of $27 million means less money for government programs and calls into question the assertion of the Premier and the NDP is on track and calls into question the estimates and assumptions used for the upcoming budget. So my question, Mr. Speaker, based on the Premier's previous sleight-of-hand budgeting, how is it possible that this coming budget will be any different than the misleading document used to market the NDP political agenda?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, this government did something that the past governments of the other parties have never done, Mr. Speaker, which is every single year we have come in under the expenditures set out in those budgets, Mr. Speaker. Revenue forecasts are just forecasts, Mr. Speaker. And in fact, the Auditor General's letter points out that revenue forecasts will change over the course of the year. What we control is expenditures, Mr. Speaker. And the ministers who are responsible for these departments make sure that every dollar that citizens put into our hands is well managed, and each of the departments ensure that they get maximum service delivery for the money we get. And over these years, we've managed to bring them in under budget. That's an accomplishment.
Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Speaker, the Premier is right. His government has done something that no other previous government has done, and this Premier has done something that no other previous Premier has done, and his former Minister of Finance did. They stood in this House and completely misled the people in this House, Mr. Speaker. No other government has done, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this deliberate overestimate, Mr. Speaker, of $27 million in revenue projections is just one more way the Premier has published faulty estimates, Mr. Speaker, in his budgets. Year after year, employee estimates are estimated higher than actuals show to be the case. Expenditures in all departments are consistently estimated higher than is required, Mr. Speaker, in practice. Mr. Speaker, will the Premier tell Nova Scotians what accounting sleight of hand he is using in this year's budgeting to attempt to divert attention away from his poor economic development performance?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, thank you very much for the opportunity to respond to the Leader of the Opposition's question. The reality, Mr. Speaker, is that we have in the Leader of an Opposition a person who has said that they would never invest in good jobs in this province. They have said that he spent the last number of months criticizing the working people down at the shipyard, Mr. Speaker. This is a shameful thing for the province. Mr. Speaker, our budgets are the hallmark of good government.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
No, Mr. Speaker, what I've criticized is the Premier giving a $260 million free money to one of the richest people in Canada at the expense of Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, nothing that this Premier has done in the past 4 years has given him any credibility, Mr. Speaker. After promising no tax increases, the Premier has hiked the HST, increased 1,400 user fees, Mr. Speaker, and added the NDP electricity tax to every power bill in this province. Mr. Speaker, the Premier has chosen Irving over classrooms, Daewoo over emergency rooms, and Resolute over universities, Mr. Speaker. After all of the broken promises, faulty budgets, how can the Premier's projections in this coming budget be any different than the overestimated revenues, university prepayments, and other fiction of NDP budgets passed?
The Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, you know, the Leader of the Opposition just doesn't get it.
No.
It's not about a company. It's not about Irving or Daewoo. It's not about any company. It's about the workers who work there, Mr. Speaker. It's about the communities. It's about the people who get to bring home a paycheck. It's about the people who are able to support their families as a result of the jobs that are created. That's what it's about. That's what it's about. It's about our citizens, and it's certainly not about the Leader of the Opposition.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Finance Minister. In the 2009 election, the NDP made a lot of promises, and a lot of promises that turned out to be empty. They told Nova Scotians in no uncertain terms that there would be no tax increases, no cuts to programs, and balanced budgets every year. Well, that was then. Now we've seen how the NDP have raised the HST, increased 1,400 user fees, slashed education funding, and also resorted to budget schemes like the university prepayment in previous years. Now they're asking Nova Scotians to trust them as they promised to lower taxes that they weren't supposed to have raised in the first place. Mr. Speaker, my question to the minister is, given this backdrop, will the minister explain how she intends to deal with the very real problems of decreased federal transfers, decreased personal revenue for the province, and still keep the round of promises that are being made?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question and the opportunity to stand here and talk about how proud I am that this government was able to keep virtually all of our platform promises. Mr. Speaker, and that includes taking the HST off home heat and electricity. Mr. Speaker, something that party does not support and, given an opportunity, would put back on, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park on her first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, that's an interesting answer, given that while they took off the HST with one hand from home heating fuel, they allowed Nova Scotia Power to increase the rates 30% from 3 years ago. Mr. Speaker, we know that there were 1,400 user fees hiked 2 years ago under the NDP government. And this is the very same NDP government who called fee increases across-the-board tax hikes. And that was when they were in opposition. But just like the promises not to increase taxes, the NDP has no trouble saying one thing and doing quite another. My question, Mr. Speaker, to the Minister of Finance, can the Minister tell Nova Scotians if she will be hiking fees for the coming fiscal year?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, as members of this House know, this government had a four-year plan to bring this province back to a balanced budget. It's a plan that's working. Next week, we will table a balanced budget, Mr. Speaker. And there won't be some trickery like we've seen from the Liberal Party the last time they brought a budget into this House that had a huge millions of dollars off the books, Mr. Speaker, the Health Investment Fund, Mr. Speaker. It will be a balanced budget, and it will be transparent to the people of this province as the result of a four-year plan that was sensible and that reveals good results, Mr. Speaker.
Order, order, please. Order, please. Trickery is an unparliamentary language. And ask the Honourable Minister. The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I certainly will withdraw that comment.
Thank you.
Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park on her final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I appreciate that clarification because I was going to use the same word myself, so I will not, do that. Mr. Speaker, the NDP have... The NDP have lost the trust of Nova Scotians. With each broken promise, they've chipped away at their own credibility. While he was in opposition, the Premier called user hikes across-the-board tax increases. And he even called on the government of the day to make user fee hikes part of the budget. Mr. Speaker, my question to the minister is, given that the last time the NDP government hiked user fees, it was done outside of the House and late on a Friday afternoon, will the Minister of Finance, the new Minister of Finance as well, provide greater accountability and include the NDP fee hikes in the budget so that they can be properly debated in the House?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Mr. Speaker, thank you very much for an opportunity to respond to the Honourable Member. Mr. Speaker, you know, I look at the various provinces across the country who are struggling to bring their provinces back to balance. And Mr. Speaker, the way we will be able to do this, as I explained earlier today at the Chamber of Commerce luncheon, where the Honourable Member was, we are able to do it because we had a sensible plan. The plan had three components, which included raising revenue, expenditure management, and growing the economy. And Mr. Speaker, it's a plan that's worked. We will have a balanced budget here in this House next week, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In his most recent report, the Auditor General said that $27 million is, and I quote directly, significant enough to be corrected, and I will table that page from the Auditor General's report, that it is significant enough to be corrected. Certainly, Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotians would believe that $27 million is significant enough to be corrected, and they are the ones who rely on accurate reports from their government to know the true financial position of the province. Mr. Speaker, my question to the Premier, does the Premier agree that $27 million is significant enough to be corrected?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, the revenue estimates that came in after the post-it date for the budget was in fact corrected, and it was corrected in the first financial forecast update just exactly as it should have been.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, that is not what the Auditor General says in his report, and I know that Nova Scotians would say that there is no deadline to tell the truth. That is what is at issue here today, Mr. Speaker. In fact, in his report, which I just tabled, the Auditor General says it was already known that the deficit included as part of the budget was unachievable when it was presented to the public. Clearly, Mr. Speaker, the government was desperate to show that they were on track when, in fact, they were not. My question to the Premier, why tell Nova Scotians the government was on track when they knew it wasn't?
Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I know that the Leader of the Conservative Party has seen this, although he chooses to ignore it. It is the letter of the Auditor General. It's dated April 2nd, 2012. And I'll just read this part of it. It says, the 2012-2013 revenue estimates comply with presentation and disclosure standards established by the Canadian Institute of Chartered Accountants.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I wish the Premier would read the entire report because the Auditor General says that the government knew there was an error in their budget in time to correct it and chose not to. I know that we learned yesterday in the throne speech that the Premier and his government live in some world of virtual reality, where they virtually believe that they virtually have kept their promises.
Virtually.
One of their promises was really balanced budgets. Now we know, four deficit budgets later, $1 billion in more debt later, a $27 million known error that not only did they not correct when they should have, but didn't even tell Nova Scotians about when they presented the budget. That is the kind of virtual world that the government of Nova Scotia now inhabits. Now the Premier is making another promise to the people of Nova Scotia that the upcoming budget will be balanced. After four deficits, after $1 billion of new debt, after knowingly presenting a budget that was wrong in this House and to the people of Nova Scotia, my question to the Premier, how can Nova Scotians trust his government ever again?
Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thanks to the good work done by our finance ministers, we managed to bring down the $1.4 billion deficit that was left behind by the Conservatives. A great burden to the citizens of this province. Mr. Speaker, I want to table for you, though, something that the leader of the Conservative Party said just the last little while. When commenting on the throne speech, he said, "I really want that to be true. This province has a sorry history of budgets that people said weren't balanced, that were balanced, that really weren't." I wonder if he understands how ironic that is, given the last 10 years of budgets that were presented by the Conservative Party.
The Honourable Member for Halifax-Clayton Park.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Finance. Mr. Speaker, for the months leading up to this spring sitting of the legislature, the finance minister went around the province lowering expectations for a balanced budget. She refused to say whether she'd be able to balance the budget, and she dodged the question on the matter. This time last year, the former finance minister was telling Nova Scotians that the deficit was actually $27 million less than it actually was. And in the first budget that the NDP brought in, they resorted to distorting the budget by making prepayment, a huge prepayment, to universities, a practice that they had previously condemned when in opposition. Mr. Speaker, my question to the minister is, after all of these financial distortions, will the Minister of Finance explain how she thinks Nova Scotians can believe the NDP now?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, as I indicated earlier, we had a plan to restore this province's budget back to a balanced position. The plan consisted of a temporary increase in the HST. The plan consisted of bringing department budgets in as we tabled them, and Mr. Speaker, it included growing the revenue of the province through economic development. The budget that will be tabled next week will be balanced, and it will be a result of very hard work of many people, and it will be a balanced budget because that plan worked, unlike the Liberal Party, who have no plan, Mr. Speaker. I have yet to hear any plan articulated by the Honourable Member or any members of her caucus. So, Mr. Speaker, we understand that good planning is what leads to balanced budgets and results, and we'll be very pleased next week to have the details available for the people of the province.
The Honourable Member for Halifax-Clayton Park on her first supplementary.
Thank you very much. Mr. Speaker, the minister is missing so many important facts in her answers. She's missing the $300 million deficit that this year is already racking up. How is she going to overcome that $300 million? How can she convince Nova Scotians that this has been done without cuts to programs, without increased taxes, without, you know, the usual tools that you would have to do such a thing? You know, really, you cannot pull a rabbit out of a hat. Mr. Speaker, the NDP have created fiscal fictions every step of the way. There's been no talk about the huge and escalating debt, $1.5 billion already more in debt in the last 4 years. And Mr. Speaker, this is all chipping away very seriously at the credibility of the NDP, and the minister knows it, and the premier knows it. Mr. Speaker, after all the fictions and last-minute budget magic, how does the finance minister expect Nova Scotians to have any faith in the fiscal capacity of the NDP government?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And again, Mr. Speaker, we had a plan. It was a plan that was very well thought out. It was a plan that rested on some analysis of what the financial position of the province was. It sought expert advice from an expert panel who indicated that a comprehensive approach was required.
that included growing revenue, which resulted in a temporary increase in the HST, something that the Liberal Party opposed. They don't have a plan, Mr. Speaker. They have no idea what is required to bring this province back to financial health, Mr. Speaker. However, we made the hard decisions, the tough choices, and next week we will see the payoff for those tough decisions, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question to you will be to the Chair of the Treasury Board. The Deputy Premier has failed to answer for the $27 million misinformation that had left Nova Scotians in the dark about the true state of the province's finances. We still don't know who knew what when, but we do know that the decision to keep taxpayers in the dark was deliberate and political. My question to the Minister is this. Will the Chair of the Treasury Board confirm that the Deputy Minister of Finance, what the Deputy Minister of Finance told the Public Accounts Committee this morning, that it was her political masters, the Treasury Board, that made the decision not to inform Nova Scotians of the $27 million error?
Honourable the Deputy Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and the answer to that is simple. No.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West on his first supplementary.
That's probably the shortest answer I've ever heard him give. But then again, well, that's right. Mr. Speaker, the Premier and the Minister of Finance have a responsibility to treat Nova Scotians with respect. And that, Mr. Speaker, begins with telling them the truth. When it comes to the $27 million budget error, everyone on that side of the House failed to tell the truth about it. The Premier is even on record as saying that he was never told about the $27 million error and that he had no knowledge of this misinformation. My question, if no one told the Premier about the significant $27 million budget error, who should have told the Premier what was going on in his cabinet?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, the Department of Finance prepares the estimates for the budget. The Minister of Finance is the one who brings the budget speech to the House of Assembly and tables the budget documents. He did that in accordance with the practice that has been followed by, as far as I know, by all governments, certainly during the time that I've been in this House, which, believe it or not, is now going on some 16 years. And Mr. Speaker, presented to the people of this province a clear picture of a budget process that is working and a plan for government that is bringing this province back to economic stability, back to financial stability, and back to a balanced budget.
Honourable Member for Cape Breton West on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and Mike. Final supplementary will go to the Deputy Premier. It's surprising that no one seems to know who knew what, when, who didn't know, or who should have known. Certainly Nova Scotians should have been told about this big mistake of $27 million. What taxpayers want to know is, who knew and why did they allow a deliberate misinformation to take place?
Order, please. The word deliberate has been ruled many times in this House as unparliamentary, so I'd remind the Honourable Member, and probably by yourself.
And many times it wasn't appropriate, but this time it is. Mr. Speaker, I'll withdraw that comment.
Thank you.
They allow this misinformation to continue on to the public after the Auditor General said this morning that there was time to correct such a mistake. My question to the Deputy Premier, Was the Chief of Staff for the Premier kept informed about the budget developments, and did he know about the $27 million error?
The Honourable Deputy Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, what I will say is it was when we gave the announcement and it was made public at the appointed time and it was done. Who was in the room? I don't know, Mr. Speaker. There's many people come in the room. If people had been in cabinet or in various committees, people come and go all the time, Mr. Speaker. What I'm telling you is when it had to be tabled, we tabled it. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, Nichelle Benn, a 25-year-old woman with cognitive and physical disabilities, faces criminal charges because of this government's refusal to act. As a result of her organic brain disorder, Nichelle has violent episodes and has been a harm to herself and at times others. The protocol, as directed by the Department of Community Services, is to call police when Nichelle has these episodes. Will the Minister of Community Services consider Nichelle's individual needs and the pleas of her mother to reverse departmental protocol that forces this young, cognitively disabled young woman into incarceration?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Firstly, I understand the issues with families when they are have a loved one that has a disability, and in fact, I have met personally with Nichelle's mom to discuss the issues. And it's important to know that Nichelle is deemed legally as a competent individual, and that we've had many discussions, the staff has had discussion with her family. These issues are much, much more complex than the opposition member is trying to portray, and we have been working through the issue that is at hand for us to do. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on her first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, Nichelle Benn's mom is worried about her daughter's future. She's worried her daughter is going to be the next Ashley Smith. The current probation order against her daughter has no deterring effect because it can't. Nichelle has a brain disorder. There are other Nichelles across the province who are being directed to the criminal justice system because this government invokes police intervention. Will the Minister for Community Services please tell Nichelle Benn's mother and all the parents advocating for children with cognitive disabilities why this government will not change this devastating policy?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In fact, the member opposite, once again, is misleading people with the wrong type of information. And the fact is, each case is different. You cannot put them all together as one. And it depends on the circumstances. There was a third-party individual that was at risk at that point in time. There's other options that we have spoken to the family about with regards to bringing down the level of the aggressive behavior. So there's many, many different particulars, like as I said, that go along with this issue. But we have worked very hard to communicate with the family by sitting down and speaking personally with her mom, and with the all those who have been involved have been working very hard with this young lady, and she is seeming to do well at this point. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on her final supplementary.
Well, that's very interesting because I spoke to Nichelle's mom this morning, and she told me she feels like she's in the dark about her daughter's fate. If this minister is, in fact, working with the Minister of Justice on the issue, as she said last week, why is she not communicating with Nichelle's mother about it?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, in fact, after I met with Nichelle's mother, I put a team of staff together to be working towards programming for Nichelle. And we also have been talking with the facility with Nichelle. And the main point that the member doesn't understand opposite is that Nichelle is competent within the law. which means that Nichelle is the one that is able to speak for herself. I do understand the frustrations from the mom, because when you have a child that has an issue, you love that child. I have a child myself, and I would go to the ends of the earth for him. So I respect Nichelle's mother for doing the advocacy work that she has been doing. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Argyle.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Deputy Premier and Chair of the Treasury Board as well. The Auditor General identified a $27 million error in last year's budget on March 28, 2012. We know that it was drawn to the department's attention. We know as a fact that other charges were made, but mysteriously, the $27 million change was not made, even though, from what we can see, there was plenty of time to make that change. So does the Deputy Premier confirm that the $27 million error was known by Treasury Board at or before the meeting on March 28th of 2012?
The Honourable Deputy Premier.
Speaker, as I mentioned and I answered in the previous question, Mr. Speaker, we, when the it was materially responsible to make this figure public, we did it.
The Honourable Member for Argyle on his first supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And as the Minister said in one of the previous questions, that many people come in and out of those meetings. Typically, various officials attend Treasury Board meetings. Typically, the Premier, of course, is kept informed about the budget as it's being developed because, of course, it's so fundamental. If he isn't, that's a serious abdication of that responsibility. It would be incredibly surprising if the Premier's office staff were not at that March 28th meeting. Were officials from the Premier's own office kept informed of the budget developments by Treasury Board, including the $27 million? And specifically, was the Premier's chief of staff kept informed by the Treasury Board or Finance of budget developments, including the $27 million error?
Honourable the Deputy Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I'm sure the member who's asking the question knows that out of Treasury Board, we issue minute letters and people would read those minute letters. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Argyle on his final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I mean, these are very basic questions. Mr. Speaker, we believe that Nova Scotians, of course, deserve those answers. So, you know, really, the question we're trying to get an answer to is, was the $27 million error known by Treasury Board at or before that March 28th meeting? Who from the Premier's office was kept informed of budget developments, including the $27 million? And was the Premier's chief of staff provided with information about that $27 million error?
The Honourable the Deputy Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, what I will say, there was no error. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Energy. Mr. Speaker, this government has been in favour of the deal presented by Emera for Muskrat Falls before they knew what the deal was, before they knew it would be in the deal, before they knew what the costs were. And in fact, despite this splashy road show they've just gone on, they still can't answer basic questions that people have. Which, frankly, since the Premier and Energy Minister have said this project is so cost-beneficial to Nova Scotia, they should have right on the tips of their tongue. So, Mr. Speaker, will the Minister tell Nova Scotians what will the price per kilowatt-hour be for Muskrat Falls once it reaches Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Honourable Member for the question. Certainly the Maritime Link, the Muskrat Falls, is a very important project for Nova Scotians, and the project has been well researched and worked on by both Emera and by Nalcor in Newfoundland and Labrador. And the UARB has the responsibility to determine what is the best price, is it fair and just for the ratepayers of this province. That process is now underway and will be wrapped up by midsummer, and we'll wait the determination of the UARB.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his first supplementary.
So the Minister doesn't know is basically the answer. He doesn't know what it's going to cost. Mr. Speaker, the Minister talked about research. He commissioned the Dalton Report under a set of very limited conditions, which he knew would result in the answer he wanted. And I suspect the government did not expect that so many people and experts in the field would point out the errors in the assumptions made in that report. For example, the fact that the imported power assumptions were incorrect, as has been recently presented. The fact that he costed in an additional natural gas pipeline on the natural gas prices, despite the fact that Nova Scotia Power has announced they're probably proceeding with that anyhow, even with Muskrat Falls. So, Mr. Speaker, why was the Dalton report limited in the options it could look at? And why did the government allow estimates to be made of imports without Dalton even contacting directly export suppliers such as Hydro-Québec?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I guess the Honourable Member probably has a better direct line to Hydro-Québec than others would have, but Mr. Dalton is a well-respected energy expert. He's worked for the province of Nova Scotia for more than 12 years. He's worked for the province of New Brunswick and various states in the U.S. And he lives by his credibility. He lives by his reputation. He's called to be an expert witness at public hearings, and the evidence he has to defend. He has to present it be fully tested by interveners at whatever hearing he's at. So he's going to be before the UARB, and he'll have to defend the evidence, the information he's find that shows that the Maritime Link is the lowest cost option for Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I know this government has suddenly become very anti-Quebec, with the Premier consulting on a federal bill with the NDP to help break up Canada more easily. But once in the last session, and I will table this, in one of the last sessions, the Premier actually trumpeted energy from Hydro-Québec. This was just about a year ago, when he said, "This will be our chance to bring more energy from Hydro-Québec." Now he's suddenly against it. Very odd. You know, Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotia Power has submitted information to the Utility and Review Board stating they approached Hydro-Québec a few years ago, and it was available. At the time, they couldn't get the price they wanted. Well, and I'll table that. But they have publicly claimed it was available. Yet, in the legislature in Quebec, and I will table this, a month ago it was found that Hydro-Québec has extensive surplus energy, which they are trying to offload cheaply to suppliers. We know that Vermont and Rhode Island have since signed on for that. Mr. Speaker, we know that energy is available. We know now from the legislature in Quebec in February that energy is available cheaply. Will the minister commit to having the evidence that is submitted to the board by his department updated and corrected for all the errors? And frankly, will he have it, the report, corrected so that it seeks out formal proposals from possible import suppliers before the hearings begin?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, it's really, really hard to determine if the Liberal Party is supporting Hydro-Québec or they're supporting the Maritime Link. And the member mentioned a quote from Quebec. I want to maybe bring up a quote as well, Mr. Speaker. It's the leader of the Liberal Party had this to say in Hansard about a year ago, March the 30th. He said that the Lower Churchill Falls is an important project that I believe will allow us to move towards a more renewable, sustainable energy market in Atlantic Canada. Yet, just a few months later, he had this to say about the Lower Churchill. He said, quote, "It's a bad deal." So I'm trying to figure out why they're flip-flopping around here in two different directions. So, Mr. Speaker, is the Liberal Party, are they supporting Nova Scotians, or are they supporting Hydro-Québec?
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on a new question.
You know, Mr. Speaker, the position of the Liberal caucus has been quite clear, and unfortunately nobody else in Nova Scotia has had a problem identifying it. We think Muskrat Falls has potential. The deal that this government has signed on to lacks answers, and this government doesn't have them. You know, and Mr. Speaker, let's be clear. We are not the only ones. Mr. Speaker, the Premier received a letter recently, which I will table, which asked which asked the minister to give the Utility and Review Board more time. The consumer advocate wrote a letter to the premier asking that the Utility and Review Board be given more time because the answers are not available. The small business advocate wrote a letter, and I'll table that, to the premier asking that more time. The Canadian Wind Energy Association has also criticized this government. So, Mr. Speaker, why is this government continuing to refuse the URB more time to review the Muskrat Falls deal when almost every intervener except for his department is asking for it?
The Minister of Energy.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I guess we can both answer the question, but, we're in this House here last spring, and we debated and talked about the Maritime Link Act, and as I recall, the Liberal Party fully supported the Maritime Link Act, as did the Conservative Party. We had regulations out last summer that everybody had an opportunity to comment on, not a comment from the Liberal Party about those regulations. And now I hear they want more time. I understand a lot of that information that's available has been previous documents and reports that have always been available to them. And we feel strongly that a half a year is sufficient time. And the UARB, if they want more time, they'll come to us. But really, half a year is sufficient time.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, to clear, first of all, we did point out that the time might be an issue at the time, and even recently, this minister said that the consumer advocate was okay with it, so it was fine. Well, you know what? The consumer advocate is not okay with it now. I tabled that letter, so it's time for the minister to fix that. You know, Mr. Speaker, the fact is we won't even know the cost. He stands up and says, well, the Utility and Review Board can look at it. Well, here is the overview from Emera, which says that the final cost won't be known for the link for ratepayers until 2017. That is well after the review. Mr. Speaker, they're not even going to file the final capital costs until this fall, which is months after the Utility and Review Board has to make a decision. So, Mr. Speaker, does the minister think it's right that the NDP timeline, which basically nobody thinks is correct anymore or is enough time, means a decision will be made on a project while the final numbers won't even be filed until late this fall, and Nova Scotians won't, and the URB won't even know what the rate is until 2017. Does he think that's okay?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Again, I'm trying to figure out whether the Liberal Party is in favour of the Maritime Link or perhaps more in favour of something else, but we fully consulted with the UARB. We consulted with the other interveners there, the Small Business Advocate and the Avon Group and the Consumer Advocate and so on. And everybody said, yeah, they had enough time. And if the UARB feels they need more time, it's up to them to come forward with that proposal.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I'm disappointed in the Minister of Energy. We've come to expect that the misleading and incorrect statements about the opposition would come from the member from Hammonds Plains Upper Sackville. Not from him, but I guess he's picking up some tips there. You know, Mr. Speaker, he just stood and said, well, if they want more people, want more time, they should ask. I just tabled letters from almost every single intervener. Sign asking for more time. Mr. Speaker, the consumer advocate, who the minister said was one of the people that said 6 months was enough, has said more time is needed. The small business advocate says more time is needed. So, Mr. Speaker, will the government heed the call of the consumer advocate, the small business advocate, the Canadian Wind Energy Association, and so many more who have asked for more time so that this project can be properly reviewed and we can have the answers that Nova Scotians deserve that these guys want to hide?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As I said previously, we have fully consulted with the UARB, and we're still continuing to work with them if required. I just want to quote what the Honourable Member from Dartmouth East had to say on May the 10th of last year, talking about legislation that requires the UARB will review the proposed undersea cable. It says Liberal energy critic Andrew Younger said he's satisfied with the legislation. So I'll table that, Mr. Speaker.
Leo? Order, please. Order. The Honourable Minister would know that by calling somebody by their name in the legislature is unparliamentary. The Honourable Minister would know that naming somebody in any matter, whether it's a resolution or a question, is I would ask the honourable member to retract that. Thank you.
I'll retract the first name.
Yes. Thank you. The honourable member for Dartmouth East on a new question.
Well, Mr. Speaker, he did call me Mr., so I was happy with that. Mr. Speaker, this really isn't complicated. The Act did not have the timeline in it. We supported the Act because it was the Premier that went out and said, oh, we don't need an Act. It's going to be reviewed. Then he found out, no, actually, you do need legislation. And he was wrong, as he so often is. You know, he had to come in and fix that. We were happy he fixed that. We were happy he brought in that legislation. Too bad they gutted it in the regulations. Mr. Speaker, the fact is, you know, this is just about is strengthening the monopoly that Nova Scotia Power has. In yesterday's throne speech, the government claimed to support increased competition in the electricity market, and I will table that. This is despite the fact that at every turn they have opposed competition in the energy market. They have chosen a deal which allows Emera to make profit at every turn for Muskrat Falls, rather than the other option which Emera has put forward, which is through a power purchase agreement. So, Mr. Speaker, how can this government talk about increasing competition in the electricity market in its throne speech, while at every turn fighting competition and choosing to give Nova Scotia Power the upper hand?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, the Maritime Link is the lowest cost option for Nova Scotians, according to the Dalton report that's been commissioned. It's the lowest or the best option on an environmental front, as far as reducing our greenhouse gas targets and meeting the federal coal regulations. And I know the UARB will look at all the evidence and test that, and interveners will question it and to determine what is right for ratepayers. So, and the rate of return is also part of that. So, the UARB has that responsibility and goal, and I'm sure they'll look at all the evidence before they make an informed decision.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his first supplementary.
No, Mr. Speaker, this morning the board put out a letter to the interveners saying, basically, we're responding to the request to extend the timeline at the board. They said we can't because the minister won't let us. They said we will adjust some of the other timelines within there, but the decision date and the hearing date has to stay the same. You know, I am going to table that. You know, Mr. Speaker. You know, Mr. Speaker, I would hope the minister's already actually seen that letter that amends the timelines. Mr. Speaker, at the end of the day, this government is choosing to support a deal that he stands up and says is the cheapest and lowest cost, yet he can't tell us what the cost is. He says there's going to be enough time at the board to review it, and yet every intervener except his own department has said more time is needed. So, Mr. Speaker, why does this government think that this deal is better with Emera having the opportunity to make as much profit as possible rather than waiting until we actually have the numbers?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And certainly the Muskrat Falls, Lower Churchill is part of our energy plan, but there's a whole lot more to it than that. We've had the opportunity to go around the province over the last number of weeks and engage with Nova Scotians in our energy tour. In fact, we had over 500 Nova Scotians that come out to our various meetings from Yarmouth to Sydney. And we're there able to talk about our energy plan, includes the Muskrat Falls, but includes diversification into wind power and tidal power and sustainable biomass and natural gas and native hydroelectricity, as well as what we're importing from Newfoundland and Quebec. So it's all designed to get us off of coal, a coal that governments in the past have relied on for far, far too long. And it's all about diversification and providing the lowest, fairest rates in electricity for Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his final supplementary.
You know, Mr. Speaker, this is no different than when the government rigged the South Canoe Project so that Nova Scotia Power could hide some of their costs and then bring it to ratepayers in turn to not have a fixed cost when the other renewable energy suppliers were offering to supply cheaper energy at a fixed cost over a longer term. You know, Mr. Speaker, This minister is doing everything he possibly can to pad Nova Scotia Power's bottom line and to protect their monopoly, time after time after time again. And now he doesn't want to give the board more time. I just tabled a letter which showed their amended time frame, which a part of a three-part filing they did today. The cover letter for that, which showed that they are amending the timeline. The other day, they put out a statement saying that they are unable to do. The other day, they put out a statement which clearly said, "Well, I did. You asked me, to, Mr. Speaker. You asked me to table the letter. I had. I tabled the letter. I had. I said at the time it's part of a three-part document, Mr. Speaker." Why does this government give Emera and Nova Scotia Power whatever they want while throwing independent renewable energy suppliers under the bus?
Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And, you know, I had an opportunity to have a look at the Liberal website on their energy solutions to, on power rates and... You know, on there I find a quote, one of their solutions is to provide energy by importing power from Hydro-Québec. So again, Mr. Speaker, I have to ask, you know, is the Liberal Party supporting Nova Scotians or are you supporting Hydro-Québec?
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Earlier this month, the CBRM Mayor and Council released the details of a five-year, $300 million plan to combat crumbling capital and community infrastructure, support a wastewater strategy, facilities, recreation, and fleet modernization programs. The proposal includes a $150 million commitment from Ottawa, with the CBRM and province investing $75 million each over the next 5 years. My question to the Premier, recalling his recent visit to Sydney, and meeting with CBRM Mayor Cecil Clark, does the Premier agree that CBRM's finances are beyond troubling and a major capital plan for the region is required for our survival?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I did have the opportunity to travel extensively through Cape Breton to work on a number of different projects with a number of different communities. And, of course, I was in CBRM, and I did meet with the mayor there. I must say, I did recognize him. His office surroundings and view of the Sydney waterfront is unparalleled. I also agreed with the new mayor that planning a five-year strategy was the appropriate thing to do. I pointed out to him that this is very similar to the type of approach that we've taken, for example, with the five-year road paving plan. It's so that we can plan for infrastructure improvements down the road.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The numbers related to the CBRM are alarming and have led to the development of a long-term plan for addressing our many challenges. Sydney is the only city in Atlantic Canada with double-digit unemployment. The CBRM unemployment rate itself sits at 17.5% and, of course, even higher in some Cape Breton communities. The CBRM owns 20% of all required wastewater upgrades in Atlantic Canada, a whopping $454 million, Mr. Speaker. With aging infrastructure and shrinking revenues, our municipality needs an innovative path to develop assets and keep our communities sustainable. So my question to the Premier, at this critical crossroad, would the Premier agree that the province must engage in active and immediate discussions with the CBRM to determine their level of support?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, in fact, we have been in touch with, obviously, having those discussions with CBRM. What we told them was that, of course, what they have produced is kind of a one-line estimate of various projects that, given a new infrastructure Bill Canada fund, we'd be willing to work with them on some of those projects in order to develop them further to actually see what the costs of them would be. And, of course, there will be infrastructure spending in the province over the next number of years. And, of course, Sydney would be included in that kind of budgeting. Cape Breton would be included in that kind of budget. But I also heard the member ask about innovative ways of doing infrastructure. And you always have to be careful when the Liberals use language like that, because, of course, innovative to them the last time they were in government meant toll roads, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on his final supplementary.
During his visit last week, the Premier told CBC that, quote, a five-year plan is the right way to go, end quote, and stated that the province would look at sharing in this type of program. The Premier also used social media to say the province will work with the CBRM on its needs. For the CBRM plan to succeed, they require a $75 million commitment from their coffers and $75 million from the provincial government. I'm sure the federal infrastructure funding of $70 billion, coupled with the infrastructure needs being included in yesterday's throne speech, are encouraging for the mayor and councillors. As we stand now, Mr. Speaker, roadwork will be virtually halted in the CBRM this year due to funding restrictions. So my question to the Premier, as the CBRM elected officials and staff pore over their budget today in an attempt to determine how to proceed with exhausted reserves and residents who are taxed to the breaking point, can the Premier tell the House if he intends to support the CBRM five-year capital plan?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I believe I just said I thought the five-year capital plan is indeed the right way to go, multi-year budgeting. We're pleased to work with the mayor on that plan to look at how it fits in with the renewed federal budget, federal Build Canada plan, actually. So, Mr. Speaker, that's what we're going to do. We wonder what the Liberals will do. Are they going to bring back tolls on highways? Is that the way they're going to bring infrastructure? Is that what they would do to bring infrastructure into the province? Is it more P3 schools, Mr. Speaker? Is the Liberal plan all about selling infrastructure in Nova Scotia to private owners?
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West.
Yeah, that's where it is. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Deputy Premier. Residents of Gabrus have been patient as they wait for their seawall to get fixed. The wall continues to deteriorate without repairs, and as the Deputy Premier would know, last weekend it suffered some more damage. In the throne speech on page 11, it states, it is the responsibility of government to provide for the safety of the citizens. This is a responsibility that my government accepts and backs with action, is the statement that's made. My question to the Deputy Premier, is this statement a statement that the people of Gabrus can believe that your government will stand by and support?
The Honourable Deputy Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm not one to say this line, like thank the member for her question. I really don't do that, but I will do it in this sense because I appreciate where it's coming from. I appreciate that the member himself and the mayor went to see the Minister of Fisheries on this very subject of looking after the seawall in Gabrus, in particular how we're going to come about doing that. And in my conversations with the mayor and so on, it's that if the federal government would just own up to their ownership of that wall and go forward, and we're willing to listen to any kind of funding formulas that if we can accommodate, we would certainly do that for the good people of Gabrus.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West on his first supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I want to thank the Minister for that answer. Mr. Speaker, a number of homes in Gabrus could be damaged or destroyed if this wall is breached. The seawall protects a multi-million-dollar fishery that employs roughly 25 Nova Scotians. And as we heard earlier, unemployment in Cape Breton exceeds 17%. It's one of the six highest regions in the country. And every job is vital, and we can't afford to lose any of them. The CBRM has committed to moving forward, and the federal government has agreed to look for funds, hoping that a sharing agreement can be reached. So I take it from the minister's last answer that his government will be prepared to be a funding partner in such an agreement. Is that accurate?
The Honourable Deputy Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, it's neither wise nor prudent to negotiate agreements on the floor of this House. Speaker, if the federal government has said time and time again that it doesn't own the seawall, but if there is apparently a change in that and they want to sit down and talk to us, we'll talk to them, Mr. Speaker. We'll see where it's at. But let's not kid ourselves. The responsibility for that wall is the federal Tory government. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West on his final supplementary.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And let's not kid ourselves. This wall was built on provincial land. The government of the government of the day of the federal government 70-odd years ago. You guys might think it's funny, but if you lived in the village of Gabrus and you were looking out your window every day and wondering if your host was going to stay there, it wouldn't be so funny. Now, I'm trying to be calm. Mr. Speaker, if the Premier wants to answer this question for the people of Gabrus, that would be refreshing because he hasn't answered anything so far today. But the reality is, for the people of Gabrus, a report that was done by the Provincial Department of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal identified that there needed to be work done soon. The former minister, TIR, has visited the site and he has seen the damage that has been created in the community. What we are asking for is that this government be part of a solution. That's all we're asking for. And I want to know if the Premier will finally show the residents of Gabrus that he stands by his throne speech and that he will convince his cabinet colleagues that it is time to fix the seawall in Gabrus.
Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just wish that the people of Gabrus had a representative that actually had some sway with their own party, their own representatives in the federal government, Mr. Speaker. You know, Mr. Speaker, the reality is, Mr. Speaker, we take all of the infrastructure deficits. We take all.
The Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, we take all of the infrastructure deficits in this province very, very seriously. They were left to us by a government who didn't have the foresight to make the proper maintenance repairs at the time, and we, of course, are struggling among those priorities to make sure that they are properly dealt with.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you. The people of Nova Scotia are not buying the fiction that the NDP keeps trying to create. Our economy is struggling. Nova Scotians from across this province know it. In the last year, employment has fallen. There are 6,400 fewer jobs in this province. In fact, while we experience employment losses here, the rest of the country gain jobs. Mr. Speaker, will the Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism explain why he can't seem to face the facts that his $100 million corporate handouts are simply not working for Nova Scotians?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, after 250 years of Liberal and PC government, they couldn't get it right. We all know that the last 20 years were the worst 20 years in Nova Scotia recent. In Nova Scotia recent years, we also know that we came in at a time when most things were pretty well devastated, including the economy. We came in at the worst recession in recent history. And Mr. Speaker, we were able, through good management, We've managed to turn that ship around, and now, Mr. Speaker, that the future for Nova Scotians, for the first time in 20 years, Nova Scotians are optimistic, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives put it best when they said that Premier Dexter's assertions of levels of employment were misleading. In the last year, employment has fallen 6,400, Mr. Speaker. Not 20 years, not 250 years. In the last year, employment has fallen by 6,400 Nova Scotians. Our unemployment rate is 1 full point higher than it was last year, and at 9.3% is over 2 points higher than the national average of 7, Mr. Speaker. We have not turned any corner. We're in the same poor economic environment we were under the previous government. In fact, this NDP government has made us even less competitive. Mr. Speaker, why does the Minister of Economic Development continue to ignore the data and says we need a focus? Instead, we need a focus on fundamentals and diversification of our economies, not corporate handouts.
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, in 2012, we had more people in Nova Scotia employed than we did when we took over as government, Mr. Speaker. That's a fact, Mr. Yeah. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, in the last 7 years, we've earned $80 million off the interest alone of our investments, Mr. Speaker. That's $80 million for more investment into schools, into hospitals, Mr. Speaker, community services, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we are doing all the right things, Mr. Speaker, and, Mr. Speaker, the proof is in the pudding.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the unemployment rate of 9.3% masks the regional disparities outside of Halifax. 10.4 in the Valley, 12.2 in Southern NS, 12.5 in the North Shore, and of course over 17 in Cape Breton. What's even more troubling is that our youth are struggling with an unemployment rate of a whopping 18.5%. As the CCPA states, quote, despite Premier Dexter's assertions, Nova Scotia is not turning the corner with regards to unemployment, end quote, and I will table that document. My question to the Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism. Why has the Minister forgotten about the unemployed in rural Nova Scotia and the youth who want to stay here and work?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'm pleased to rise on my feet and talk about rural Nova Scotia. We know that nobody likes to see job losses anywhere in the province of Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, if the Liberals head their way, the 1,400 jobs at the Port Hawkesbury Mill wouldn't be there today. That's rural Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. That is rural Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, if the Liberals had their way, Mr. Speaker, IBM wouldn't be coming to Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, if the Liberals had their way, Mr. Speaker, projects wouldn't be coming to Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. 1,000 jobs coming to Nova Scotia that they would have killed, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is to the Minister of Education. Will the Minister tell members of this House today how many school boards will see budget cuts this year?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I was very pleased to meet with all of our school boards over the last number of weeks, and I've discussed their targets with them, so every school board in the province knows their target number. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North on her first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I will repeat the question. How many school boards will see budget cuts this year?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. One of the things that we did with our target, we made sure that we're investing in our students, and we have increased our investment, especially within terms of special education. As in all governments and all budget preparations, the budget for the Department of Education is based on our students that are in the province and the students that we serve. And based on our declining enrollment, some of our school boards are seeing increases in their budgets, and a number of school boards are seeing decreases in their budgets based on their enrollments. But we have made sure that we are protecting those areas of the province that have had extreme losses in terms of their student population. So we have capped it at 1.5 with our school boards so that we are making sure we are protecting those school boards to make sure that we are investing appropriately in our children. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North on her final supplementary.
Oh, Mr. Speaker, I guess that would be five boards that are receiving budget cuts. So for the Minister, I will clarify it is five. The Nova Scotia Teachers Union states that 700 teachers have already been cut from the system. Students are losing their education assistance, and boards are being forced to choose between paying for power or providing educational programming for much needed supports. Mr. Speaker, under this government, power rates have gone up by 30%. Failing to adequately fund public education is an insult to our students and to our educators. So will the minister commit to the students and the parents today that she will provide the additional funding to boards that they need to cover power rates so students will not have that money taken from the classroom?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And we are investing appropriately in our students in this province. With the target numbers that I was able to provide to our school boards a couple of weeks ago when I met with them, we recognize that there is a 3% increase for per student investment for our children in this province. Our budget has increased, and we are making sure that our school boards that have seen significant decline are protected. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North on a new question.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Another question that could have a quick and easy answer. Can the minister tell members of this House how many students are waiting for direct service from our school psychologist and our speech-language pathologist?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I don't have that data at my fingertips. That would be information I would need to ask the school boards. But I will say that under the target budget numbers that we gave out a couple of weeks ago, that we recognize that we need a few more people in our system to serve the needs of our students. So there will be more psychologists and speech pathologists hired in the coming year. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North on her first supplementary.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker, and for the Minister's information and all others here. That information was requested of school boards. It was submitted by school boards. The department has it, and I will table it for all of the boards. It comes to approximately 2,000 students who are on the wait list for speech language and school psychologists. I would encourage the minister to look at it. It was submitted in June. So, was the minister aware of these wait lists when she announced further cuts to public education?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. One of the things that I look forward to is that during our budget estimate debates, I look forward to the questions from the Honourable Member, and will answer them willingly at that time. I do not have the data in front of me to answer the questions that she's asking about the budget, but I am looking forward to that in the coming days. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North. On her final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I guess my question to the minister would be, that information was available. It was in the minister's hands. It should have been used when the minister was preparing budgets. So my question to the minister is this. With five boards getting funding cuts, with wait lists of over 2,000 students to be assessed for speech, language, and school psychologists, it would seem that the announcement a few months ago that the minister once again is looking to balance the books on the backs of the kids in this province. So, Mr. Speaker, my question to the minister, why should students and parents across this province trust their children's education to a minister who cuts funding when our most vulnerable students cannot access supports, assessments, remediation, or programs?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I have to say that I'm very proud to be part of a government that is investing in our students. We have made sure that we have put investments in place to meet the needs of every student in this system. We have a situation with declining enrollment, and we are meeting that by being innovative in an NDP way, by providing virtual school, by succeeding in reading, skills, trades. We're making sure that the math is appropriate. We are investing in the students in this province.
The Honourable Member for Hants West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question to this afternoon is for the Minister of Health. Mr. Speaker, paramedics have been engaged in negotiations for some time. In late February, we learned that paramedics voted 98% in favour of rejecting their employer's offer. That was with 95% coming out of the membership, Mr. Speaker. The government and paramedics are reportedly far apart. My question to the Minister, has the government made any significant concessions to paramedics yet to prevent a strike?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I appreciate the question from the member. We all want to know that our paramedics are there to ready to respond in emergencies across the province. No one, Mr. Speaker, I know the member opposite, and definitely myself, Mr. Speaker, want to see a strike. That's why we're continuing to encourage both sides to work through the collective bargaining unit process, Mr. Speaker. We don't want to see a work disruption, and I'm very confident that the two sides will work extremely hard to avoid that.
The Honourable Member for Hants West on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Minister as well for that answer. I know I'm certain that he does not want to see that group on the street by way of a strike, Mr. Speaker. The fact that 98% of paramedics came out, though, is quite significant, and they could be off the job as soon as April the 12th. Mr. Speaker, in the days leading up to the last paramedic strike, and some of us might remember that in 1999, the Premier, then in opposition, asked for a detailed contingency plan to ensure emergency services were not disrupted. And I'll table that. That was enhanced, Mr. Speaker. These valued healthcare professionals handle about 450 calls these days in this province that Nova Scotians rely on these services. My question to the Minister, what's the Minister's plan for those 450 people each day who will call for an ambulance and it won't be there? Potentially after April the 12th.
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and we're working extremely hard to encourage both sides to sit down at the bargaining table. We respect the collective bargaining process, Mr. Speaker, but knowing and being a responsible government, we are preparing in case there is a labour disruption here in the province of Nova Scotia. We're taking that job very seriously, and we're working to ensure that we have everything in order in case that happens. But I do encourage both sides to get back to the table and go through the process so that we can come to an agreeable collective agreement between the paramedics and EMC.
The Honourable Member for Hants West on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank the Minister for that answer. And again, I'm sure that having been part of that in 1999, he nor I nor anyone else in Nova Scotia want to see that happen again in this province. Paramedics play a big role in providing overnight care, as an example, at CECs when no physician is present. This is what the NDP did when it broke its promise, though, to keep the ERs like Cobequid centres open. We put these paramedics in place, and they're a valuable asset in their communities where they're at. They also provide services in nursing homes and a variety of other things, Mr. Speaker. So Nova Scotians are going to be very concerned come April 12th if something is not done. So the question I really have today is, the Minister states there is something being put together. Will he table in this House in the coming days as we lead up to this without a resolution that contingency plan so that all Nova Scotians will have some comfort in that services will be available if, in fact, paramedics do walk out on strike?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I want to reassure Nova Scotians, as Minister, as a member of this government, that my colleagues, the Minister of Labour and Work and Advanced Education, is working extremely hard to ensure that we minimize any disruption in services here in Nova Scotia, especially from healthcare providers, especially from our paramedics. That's why we believe in the principles of collective bargaining. We are optimistic. A solution can be found, Mr. Speaker, but we also are preparing.
The Honourable Member for Bedford-Birch Cove.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In a move to relocate jobs to a rural area, this government closed maintenance enforcement offices across the province in places like Kentville, New Glasgow, and Amherst, centralizing them in the riding of the minister formerly responsible for the Public Service Commission. Will the Minister of Justice please tell us how many trained, experienced maintenance enforcement officers actually moved with the program?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
I'm very happy to report that the hiring is going on. The team is just about completed, and we're putting together quite a team of young, vibrant, energetic people that are going to live in Cape Breton, not like the opposition that are concerned about taking jobs away from there. We're looking about putting people in there to work, and so we're excited about the new team that's going to go in there and provide high-quality service.
The Honourable Member for Bedford, Birch Cove, on her first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And for the Minister's information, 11 officers were transferred from the Sydney office to New Waterford. There are over $80 million in owed court-ordered payments not going to women and children across the province. Given the loss of 24 experienced staff people, with some enforcement officers already with caseloads of over 700 cases, can the Minister of Justice tell us what impact closing 5 offices, moving these offices, opening a new office, hiring a new workforce, and training a new workforce will have on the families who are owed over $80 million?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I really value that question because it certainly outlines the difference between us as a government and the opposition. The opposition believes in just spending more money, continuing to do the same thing over and over again without making any changes or improving. Their philosophy is, if it didn't work 10 years ago, let's put more money into it and let's see if it'll change. Our belief is, let's be more creative, let's invest in people in Cape Breton. We know the talent's there. We know the intellectual wealth is there. And we're going to enrich that area by putting people in the neighborhood. We also know, Mr. Speaker, that by closing those smaller satellites, we're in a virtual world today, the technology and bringing people together and assuring that the skills are better. So the communication system is better there today, and that team will be able to work more efficiently and effectively. Their belief is, let the money grow. We're believing in taking approaches to attack it. That's the difference between us and the opposition.
The Honourable Member for Bedford, Birch Cove, on her final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This government moved jobs out of rural areas to a rural community. This is the NDP's economic development plan, Mr. Speaker. This move was purely political. The NDP used to tout its commitment to women and to children, but here is a clear example of the NDP putting politics over women's economic security. And the minister over there may be laughing, but I'll tell you, the people who are waiting for payments are not laughing right now, Mr. Speaker. Will the Minister for Justice admit today that moving the maintenance enforcement program will disadvantage women and children waiting for support while their arrears payments are already further delayed, not just by delinquent payers, but by a delinquent government?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In my area, for example, we moved some jobs from the Pictou County area, but we built a new correction facility in there to help bring stability back and make a sound decision that made good economic sense. We also moved, for example, invested in the LED lighting and moved jobs from Amherst and put
them. Order, please. Time allotted for oral questions put by members to ministers has expired. We will now do opposition members' business. Bill number 1, Accountability and Economic Development Assistance Act. I will now recognize the Honourable Member for Glace Bay.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thanks so much. I certainly welcome the opportunity to speak on behalf of our caucus on Bill 1, Accountability and Economic Development Assistance Act.
an act to ensure accountability in providing economic development assistance in Nova Scotia. So first, I'd like to just talk a little bit about the summary on what this bill entails and sort of what the focus of Bill 1 would be. A recipient of economic development assistance must provide, upon request, the details of an economic development assistance agreement signed with the province, the terms and conditions, and how the recipient is proceeding with regards to meet any targets and timelines set out.